Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. Well, it's been a minute, but the Databook podcast is back, and we're glad you've joined us. I talk with Robbie Hughes, the founder and chief executive officer of Lumion, a firm that works with healthcare organizations to automate processes to reduce the burden on staff and improve patient care. We talked about some of the challenges facing the healthcare industry, the need for higher quality patient engagement, staffing shortages, and transforming healthcare organizations. Thanks for joining us. We're talking with Robbie Hughes of Lumion for our discussion today. And why don't we start by just talking about the company and what your company does?
Sure. It's great to be here, Ron. Thank you for having me. So the goal of Lumion is really to reduce the cost of care delivery whilst improving the quality of care delivery. And the way we do this is by getting rid of variability in care delivery. And we do that with automation and the orchestration of people and systems. We tend to focus on larger customers, so systems, you know, large IDNs. But what's quite nice is we do this kind of in a piecemeal approach. So you can start with one thing and then add another and another. So you don't have to kind of reimagine everything on day one. Our ambition broadly is really to try to address the core entry points of patient flow across the entire health system. So it could be access, elective surgery, the ED, et cetera. And we believe that if we do that across an entire health system, we should be able to minimize unnecessary utilization through proactive targeting of patient need, should be able to smooth flow into ambulatory and elective care, as well as the ED, and we should be able to ensure rapid and safe discharge into the home. So when you put it all together, our goal and our ambition is to really help reduce the cost of care delivery at a system level. That makes sense?
That makes very good description. I'm curious to would. There's so much stress that different healthcare leaders are dealing with now in the middle of the pandemic. I'd just be curious here, what are you hearing from healthcare leaders about the big things that are keeping them up at night?
Well, I mean, the number one thing that we're hearing is staffing issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, every single day, but you may have a fully, you may have an 800 bed hospital, but you don't today have the staffing to be able to run all 800 beds. That's the biggest issue by none. And unfortunately, it's a kind of a compounding issue. So we've known for a while that there aren't enough nurses to accommodate the rate of growth of demand. But now between the, whether it's staff absences with people kind of ill with COVID, whether it's burnout, or even whether it's the consequences of bringing new people on board and getting them up to speed, I mean, all of these things are happening at the same time. And it's just incredibly difficult for our provider partners on the ground today to do the job they need to do, let alone deal with the increased burden of COVID and all the demands that that's placing on them.
Are there solutions to some of those staffing issues? Are there digital technology solutions that can help healthcare systems deal with those significant staffing challenges?
So the way I think about this is there's kind of first order and second order solutions. So the, you know, it's the first order problem is I have a problem. I need to engage my patients. They're remote. You know, I need to deal for them at home. And so people will kind of reach for the nearest thing for that. And that might be patient engagement. It might be remote patient monitoring. It might be, you know, any number of these solutions that kind of exist to help increase the quantity of engagement with your patients. And that's okay, and that's fine, and that's done very, very well over the last couple of years, but it's not solving the structural issue. And what I mean by that is the problem is not so much that we need to increase the quantity of engagement. The challenge is that we need to increase the quality of engagement. And in many cases, that means less engagement. But more specifically, what it means is targeting the right care to the right patient at the right time. So I'll give you an example. We have a customer doing ophthalmology, for example. They are, you'll be surprised to learn, they are not big fans of using apps and digital engagement. They believe very strongly in the power of paper and the letter. And that's entirely appropriate for their patient base. But equally, you can go and look at, for example, elective surgery patients. And you know, by and large, if you're specifically doing it in an ambulatory setting, the patient's probably not that ill. They're probably digitally native, or at least certainly digitally fluent. And so that more digital type of engagement makes a lot more sense. And so when I think about kind of virtualization more broadly, I'm not really thinking about how do I put a digital veneer on the things that I'm doing today. What I'm really thinking about is service redesign so that I can accommodate the specific needs of my patients so that I'm not wasting resources doing things that aren't going to be effective. I'm not following up with patients in a way that isn't going to work. You know, sending a text message after text message to patients who haven't taken their meds, that might sound like an interesting idea, but it's unlikely to be effective if, you know, if they don't have their meds in the first place, for example. So there's a universal complexity here. But really what it boils down to is understanding the needs of the patient, being very, very specific and prescriptive about how you're going to work with those individuals to do the thing that they need. And that really is, I think, the core of the opportunity. Because if you can do that, then you won't be wasting activity, wasting resources on things that aren't going to work. And that will in turn release that productivity and actually make a big impact on how to start beginning to address some of these staffing issues.
Are these solutions that can also deal with burnout? Because I know that's an issue that a lot of healthcare leaders, or in addition to retaining folks, also preventing burnout and the overstressed folks that they have. I mean, are these solutions that can offer some light at the end of the tunnel for burnout solutions?
Yeah, and again, I think we've got to be clear about why we're getting the burnout in the first place. You know, we're not going to be able to address every single cause of burnout, but there is, you know, it's been well known for a while that putting in EHRs kind of over the last 15 years has not increased the productivity of the care team. There's been an increased documentation burden that's come as a result of it, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. If we've got better quality documentation, then you know maybe we're in a better position to understand the nature of the patient and deliver better care. So we're definitely not against documentation. But documentation in itself is an increased activity that has to take place. Fragmentation of care more broadly creates an increased need for handoffs. More handoffs means more communication, means more documentation, means more work, et cetera, et cetera. So the lens that we look at all of this through is a productive and efficient care team is likely to be so because they know exactly who needs to do what, when, how, and for which patient. And the burnout comes from kind of chasing through notes, trying to find things not being where they should be, other people not having done what they should have done or said they were going to do. It's that noise in the business process that causes a lot of this burnout. So if you can get things right first time, document clearly, deliver the appropriate care, then many, not all, but many of the sources of this burnout will go away. But the problem is, this is hard. You know, the bottom line is being specific and being, I guess, precise and accurate in the care that you deliver is a very, very hard thing to do. And really, from our point of view, it comes back to the same thing, which is how do we orchestrate, or you know, choreograph maybe is a slightly more common word, the delivery of care so that the right people know what to do, are capable of doing it, and need to do it only once. And that I think will start addressing some of these structural issues. But yeah, it's a step-by-step approach.
It's interesting you talked about the burdens of documentation and reading studies about burnout. Like, it surprised me how many times doctors have said one of their top chief stresses is the electronic health records. It's just like, you know, all that documentation goes in as being is one of the key contributors to their stress. So, and again, more documentation can be better for healthcare if it gives you the more complete picture of the patient, but it also places more burdens on the doctors and their staff in terms of doing this documentation.
That's right.
I wanted to talk about what are the priorities that you're hearing from healthcare providers. We talked obviously about dealing with stress and burnout. What about issues like automation and virtual care? Are they top priorities among healthcare leaders that you're hearing this year?
Yeah, so there's clearly interest in virtualization. There's clearly interest in doing things better and transforming. But that is it's a core interest that we've uncovered across the board. And I think the elephant in the room here really is the EHR. They're beginning to realize that they're not going to get everything that they need from that platform. Mm-hmm. And I think then the question opens up, you know, what's the right approach? Are you going to try to put together a myriad of point solutions to do that yourself? Are you going to try to turn to some sort of enterprise solution? Does an enterprise solution exist that meets your needs? I think that for me, coming into looking at healthcare kind of from an outside point of view, I mean, a little bit of context, I've had the benefit of building a company in the UK, taking it to the US, and to some extent in Europe, and seeing the differences in the different models. Mm-hmm. And what's always interesting to me is that there isn't kind of a reference model of how to build a healthcare system. Mm-hmm. If you look at different providers, even within individual states, for example, within the US, the way they're designed, it is often very, very different. The roles, the responsibilities, all of these things are not always common. The CIO, for example, will not necessarily have the same mission in one place as they might in another. So what that means from a technology perspective is if you're trying to implement a solution, you can't just go off the shelf and put something in because it's unlikely to work for you. You have to have that. You have to try to mold it to your way of working. And that presents a real challenge from a technical point of view because it's not like you can just immediately load up best practice and it'll work. So every time that we go through these sorts of industry-wide challenges like COVID, like trying to drive systematic change and improvement, the market is coming up with a myriad of different opinions and different solutions that, you know, in principle we should converge upon as an industry. But because of the diversity of opinion and how to do things, that conversion takes a really, really long time. So the way we think about this is, again, you can have a common platform in the EHR, but what's really needed is some sort of agility layer, some way of helping you bridge from where you are today to where you need to be, but accepting that it's gonna be slightly amorphous to start. It's not necessarily gonna be going all the way from A to Z. You're gonna go through B, C, D, and there's gonna be some learning along the way. And I think that's where we are as an industry today. We've got to try to help define what good is gonna look like. And we're still as a market in that place where it's yet to be defined. There are a few standout points that are truly exemplary, where we've done some amazing work, as I'm sure many others have, in showing what the future could be. But it's very far from a consensus opinion yet. So I think that the market maturity point, I think, is really the interesting thing. Yes, there are people interested in virtualization. Yes, they're interested in all these wonderful technologies, but there isn't yet a common standard of what good looks like across the market.
How do we get to that common standard?
Hoping you wouldn't ask me that. Well, look, I think the way this normally works is people talk about the good work that they've done. You know, for me, it's an amazing opportunity to come and talk to you and the people listening to this podcast about the stuff that we've been able to do for our clients. You know, we've been able to see productivity lifts in nursing teams somewhere between 2 and 4, sometimes 5x. We've seen cost reductions of 80% in total cost of care by doing this service redesign and virtualizing end-to-end these processes. It's not that, for me, these are the kinds of things that really move the needle. And then I think the burden is very much on the vendor, on us, for example, to work in partnership with other places, with other systems, and say, look, this worked here. You're different in these three ways, and therefore it needs to be tweaked. It needs to be adjusted, and design our solutions to be able to accommodate that. I think oftentimes, and this is a real challenge from a technology and particularly from a funding point of view, people will build technology companies to address a very narrow problem. Mm-hmm. Because they know that the narrower the problem, the more repeatable and more scalable it becomes. So in other words, sending a text message to a patient, it's very repeatable. It's very easy to do. You can scale that very easily. That's not really going to help a provider. That's not novel. It's not going to change the way they work. You know, the right message at the right time for the right patient with the right content triggered without anyone having to do anything. And then measuring the outcome that delivered and whether or not the outcome was the one intended in the context of the original requirements. That's harder, but because of the fact that we've got this kind of amorphous, different set of standards on the ground where people work in different ways, they have a different intent, they expect a different outcome, being able to modify that and mold it to those ways of working is really, that's where the rubber hits the road, and that's the hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. And companies that can do that at scale are few and far between, because it's genuinely difficult. But where it's done, it should be celebrated. And you know, those companies are doing wonderful things. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, broadly that's how you do it, but it's difficult.
How do you even get into the conversation with hospital leaders to address some of these questions or address like some of their technological needs when right now they're just trying to keep their heads above water? How do you get them to at some point take a step back and say, we need to be doing some things differently?
Well, I think this is kind of what I mean by the first and second order problems. So we saw telehealth spike immediately when the door to the health system was shut. You know, that's entirely natural. We need to get something in place, whether it's Teams, whether it's Zoom, you know, whether it's a trusted vendor that is specializing in that, that's all fine. But where we're at now is that people are starting to really understand what it means to have that in a sustainable, scalable environment. And the problem is that the consequences the second order consequences that come from these solutions are starting to become apparent. So I think there are two really nice examples around telehealth, for example. If you're not in the hospital, then how, and you're having a remote consult, how do you get your labs done? How do you get your imaging done? Where do you get your meds dispensed? These are all things that were driving revenue for a health system before, but now they don't because it's remote. Maybe that revenue opportunity is going to someone else. Maybe it goes to a Walgreens or a CVS, and maybe they're now in a position to capture the patient. And so that how do you retain and keep your patients on a track, on a pathway that makes sense for you is a very, very interesting problem. The next one, which I think is a little bit more pernicious, is governance. Like, how do you determine if it's appropriate for this patient to have a remote consult in the first place? Let's say, for example, I'm coming in and I've got an issue and I've got my and I'm coming in and the first thing a doctor would do or any kind of clinician would do is an exam. So you can't do an exam if they're remote. So is that good? Is that bad? Well, I don't know that it's either, really, because suddenly you can see other things. You can see that they've got a camera, or maybe they don't. Okay, so they don't have a camera. You can hear that there's a dog barking, some children crying. You can learn a lot about their social determinants very quickly because you're actually in their home. So that's good, but that's different from them being dressed up and in your consulting room. And so I think what's starting to happen now is we're starting to learn that these things need to be managed differently. There is different information we can capture, and we need to manage our protocols, our processes, our governance, et cetera, differently. Because what will be starting to emerge now is a safety issue. Mm-hmm. Like patients who would have been seen face-to-face are not getting the level of examination that they would have otherwise done. Things will be getting missed. People will be getting sued, or people will be dying. That's kind of where we are now. And so we need to make these sort of structural changes. And if we don't, then we'll kind of blindly carry on doing the things that we used to do because but in a new way, because that's just the way we've always done them. And unfortunately, that's not going to work. You know, the soap note construct is based on the idea of there being an examination. If you take out the examination, do the other parts of that still hold true? Don't know. Probably not. So it's back to your original question. How do you make time? How do you get on the agenda? I think these issues are starting to emerge themselves, and they're becoming safety issues. They're becoming material issues. And unfortunately, and I really hate to say this, for many customers, frankly, for many people in the industry, these surges, these waves, they're becoming part of life. And you can't just stop. You can't just say everything else is on hold because this is happening again. There has to be a way to see through it, plan through it. And you know, I'm married to a physician, and she spent the whole of the Christmas period vaccinating people. And you know, that was unfortunate for us, but we got through it, and she got through it, and so on. But when you're thinking about how do you keep the business of healthcare running, that's not going to stop. Either you adjust, you change, or you know, you're going to get into some fairly serious difficulties quite quickly.
Before we wrap up, I just wanted to kind of get a sense of what you thought was in store for your company in the year ahead. Where do you see your company being maybe a year from now?
So I mean, we're doing some amazing projects. We've got clients doing large scale transformation, centralizing operations, redesigning everything from inpatient case management through to elective surgery redesign, ED redesign, transition to home. I mean, our customers today are defining the future of healthcare, and it's massively exciting. From a company point of view on our side, that brings with it its own challenges. We're growing very quickly. We're bringing in new people. These will create cultural problems and scaling problems, communication problems. So these are all the things that everyone else and every other industry on the planet is going through. That's kind of the stuff that we're wrestling to the ground at the moment. But from a what are we doing to help our patients and help our customers point of view, we're doing the best work we've ever done. And so it's an amazing privilege to be in this industry right now. And I'm just so grateful that people are, you know, number one, that people have chosen to partner with us, and given us the opportunity to show what we can do. And then number two, that the stuff that we're delivering with them is proving to be as effective as differentiating for them as it has been. So we're very, very lucky.
Well, that sounds like a good note to wrap up on. So thank you very much for this conversation. Very much appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Ron. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.